So as promised, my final guest of the afternoon is on the line. He is Yigal Marcus. He is principal at Bernstein Private Wealth Management and chairman of National Conference of Synagogue Youth in Israel. Yigal, thank you for talking to us again on Chai FM.
It's great to be here again. Thank you for having me.
So, Yigal, I certainly was one person who watched Israeli 12 News and CNN and BBC all simultaneously last night, watching, thinking, oh my goodness me, there's a possibility of peace breaking out. And it suddenly dawned on me that most of us have no idea what the contents of the 21-point peace plan is. Are you able to take us through at a high level what's on the table?
Sure. Basically, what the proposed plan is BB's 5-point plan for the war, but kind of expanded outwards to make it 20. But fundamentally, it's going to call for Hamas to be removed from government, for its leaders to refuse to give up the struggle, to be evicted from Gaza, for those who are willing to put down their arms and concede, there'll be amnesty. Israel will, within 48 hours, or I think it's within 72 hours, get every single hostage, alive or dead, back from the Palestinians. Only once they get that will Israel then be required or asked to release a substantial number of terrorists or people who have been arrested since October 7th, all women and children, and then there'll be a group of folks released that have life sentences. Israel will slow. Yeah, go ahead.
No. Please continue. It's way more important than what I was going to say.
Israel will slowly withdraw from the Strip, but it will be replaced by an international board, what President Trump is calling the Board of Peace, which will effectively administer the entire territory, including will be responsible for the security that will be required to ensure that what happened on October 7th can't possibly happen again. And then, of course, Gaza will be flooded with aid from the Arab countries to try to rebuild it. He will not require people living in Gaza to leave. If they want to leave, they'll have the ability to do that, and they'll have the right to return, but they will not be required to leave during the reconstruction process, which, as you can imagine, will likely take easily probably 10 years. But they will not be required to leave. And then ultimately, they want to use this deal as to jumpstart a massive expansion of the Abraham Accords, what President Trump actually called the Abraham Accords, after yes. Bibi corrected him. and it was great.
Yeah, it was like a comedic relief.
Yeah, exactly. And then hopefully, really begin to reimagine a Middle East that will be where violence and terror will be replaced by a real opportunity, a coexistence, and hopefully peace. That's the thrust of it.
So the golden jewel in the crown has always been Saudi Arabia. Do you think, and I'm asking you to guess and surmise here, do you think that President Trump has obtained certain understandings or promises from the Saudi government or the Saudi king as to joining the Abraham Accords?
So I think, the official 20-point plan does reference the exploration of a pathway to a potential Palestinian state. Now, we've seen this for 75 years. As I said, we can put it into the agreement. There is a law in Israel that says that there has to be a referendum. 90% of Israelis are not going to vote for it as per the latest polls. So leaving in the agreement is probably benign, but that is something that will be in the agreement. And that's what the Saudis have asked for, which is some kind of process to begin, which could maybe one day lead to the establishment of a Palestinian state. Ah, by the way, one important feature is that the Palestinian Authority is required to completely overhaul the way they operate. The corruption's got to be eliminated. Textbooks in schools have to be replaced, and they have to go through major transformation in order for them to ever have the ability to one day govern in Gaza.
That's something that jumped out quite strongly at me watching this last night was the lack of a role for the PA. Clearly, that was one of Bibi's important demands.
Yeah, and he's right. You know, when he spoke at the UN and he spoke about promises the PA has given Israelis and the world for a very long time, you can't trust a word that comes out of their mouths. You know, and I was actually on TV earlier today and we discussed this, and I basically said that the Palestinian Authority's oxygen in terms of being a governing authority in the Palestinian area is basically the promise to defeat Israel, right? They want to deliver a victory. Mm-hmm. This agreement is not going to deliver a victory. This agreement is going to be a gift that they receive, but not a victory. And so to believe that they're going to reform and remove that oxygen from how they operate and how they built a constituency of terror over all these years in the hopes of defeating Israel is very hard to see. And I'm, of course, very skeptical that anything like that will ever come to pass. But it's their oxygen. They're going to, you know, and I don't see them giving up the struggle, which is how they are able to raise money and how they're able to control their population.
Just from a geopolitical and Western perspective in particular, as you're talking, I'm thinking surely the prime ministers or presidents of France and Canada and Australia and the UK knew that this was on the back boiler or happening in the background. Why then would they go ahead and give that unilateral recognition of a Palestinian state when this whole process was about to happen?
Oh, it's very simple. Just look at the growing constituencies that these failing governments need to extract in order to survive the next election. You know, it's very interesting that the British government is on the verge of collapse. The French government is on the verge of collapse. France is on the verge of a massive economic depression because of serious fiscal problems that they have. And so they're desperate. And when you're desperate, you do stupid things. And in this case, they're saying, okay, what is the fastest growing constituency in our countries? It's the Muslim vote. To attract the Muslim vote, you gotta throw Israel onto the bus. So they did that. It's gonna come back to haunt them. They are very much on the sidelines now. Israel wants nothing to do with them anymore. And I think it's gonna really, really hurt them. But in the moment, they were able to get their little celebration with the flags behind them and tell their constituents, look, I recognize a Palestinian state. What are the borders? What are the details? Well, it's details. We don't have to worry about that. But hey, we did it. It's a little bit silly. It's going to come back to haunt them. And ultimately, you know, it's going to fail in trying to attract the voters that they think they're going to be able to attract.
Let's go to Israeli domestic politics. I would imagine that Ben-Gvir and Smotrich are going to have what to say. I would imagine that Bibi's government has become quite tenuous. Is he going to have to rely on the parachute offered by Gantz and Lapid?
So it's a very interesting question. And, you know, they have to get out there and talk their talk in order to, again, attract their constituents and their voters. I actually don't think so, because if the government falls, this is still going to happen, right? This is inevitable because the next government will probably be a broader government, a more centrist government, and those parties will not have the kind of power and seat and representation that they have right now. So they can try to, you know, slow it or change it or make a big deal, but I don't think that they are going to leave the government because of this. Again, the law is the law. A Palestinian state has to have a referendum, and that's when they need to get out there and campaign against it. Now it's just a piece of paper with some words on it, but it really means nothing. And the dream of a Palestinian state to the Palestinians is so far off that I don't think they have anything to worry about. Palestinians never miss an opportunity.
To miss an opportunity, yeah. I'm interested in what the opposition to this plan is saying, what those who are opposed to it in Israel are saying. What are the kind of criticisms that are being leveled?
That's what I heard today was this is another Oslo Accord. It's not. It's a silly thing to say. This is not an Oslo Accord. Israel is winning. Israel is going to have the Gaza Strip is going to be completely demilitarized, managed by the way, the Board of Peace Donald Trump himself is going to be managing, and Tony Blair is going to be the executive that's going to be running things day to day. So it's a real organization, I think, with real international presence. And so I don't think we're going to have a threat on that border for probably a very long time. And that's very good. And so at the end of the day here, you know, we're going to have a completely neutralized or eliminated Hamas, a much safer southern border. And of course, this opens the door to securing, you know, potential peace agreements with Lebanon and Syria and Saudi Arabia and Qatar. You know, so those are all good. Those are all good. And are at the cost to us, I don't really see a cost. The cost to us right now is stopping the war, withdrawing to defensible boundaries, but not leaving a vacuum, but handing it over to what should be a formidable force under the tutelage of President Trump and Tony Blair. So what is the cost? I don't see a heck of a lot of a cost here. What I do see is an enormous amount of opportunity after years of a terrible war that has really ravaged the society here and really hurt many, many families.
Yigal, I've got 20 seconds left. Final question to you. If you were a betting man, will Hamas accept?
I think they have to.
We're going to leave it there. From your mouth to God's ears, I can only hope. Yigal Marcus, thank you so much for your time with us this afternoon, and Gemara Chatima Tovah.